commencing our meeting a bit late is because we needed to secure a quorum for the meeting. Members have equally important commitments in other committees, and usually we don't meet on a Tuesday as higher education and training. I must indicate that we've got apologies from Dr. Bosman, who has got the family bereavement, and also an apology from Mr. Moni. I should take this opportunity to congratulate Professor Lottridge for being elected the provincial chairperson of the DA in the Free State province. Today we want to deal with the Further Education and Training Colleges Amendment Bill. As we agreed, we will move a motion in the House probably this afternoon for the deferment of the processing of the Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill so that we could enable the committee to thoroughly look at provisions of the original bill and the original end of the bill that has been submitted to us. we had deliberations in the previous meeting which we thought should be articulated in today's bill. We are probably going to be required to process the bill clause by clause and will be properly advised by our legal experts as to how we must proceed. We have got two documents here, the Federal Education and Training College Amendment Bill in its original format and an amendment there too. Now, the experts will advise us to what is the document which we are going to base our discussions on.
Chair, if I can maybe assist, the bill is obviously the one that is in front of the committee as introduced to Parliament. The second document is only amendments proposed at this point in time, and this is to assist the discussion of today. There's no legal standing to it, there's no status to it, it is purely anticipated aspects that's been identified and to assist the committee when deliberating as a possibility for them to consider and to take decisions on in the course of today.
Okay. On section one of the original bill, are we in argument that we should proceed with the definition of college as introducing or removing the concept of private federal education and training institution and replacing it with a technical and vocational education and training college or a community education and training college?
Thank you. think we agree with the new definition as in sentence.
Any second?
Thank you, Chair. With the aspect that I had to come from Italy to form a quorum. It's very nice to see that I'm still important in the portfolio committee. Let me just second the current amendment, Chair, as proposed by Honorable Kwe. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'm finding myself in a strange position here as the DA opposed the bill originally. So I can't really support amendments as such, but I will participate in the discussions, but I can't say the DA supports.
And I think that is clear. Let's note that. Let's proceed to. Yeah.
Maybe I was not clear about that. Does that mean that the DA objected the whole bill as such?
I think what Professor Lodgett said is that at the political level, the DA did not see the necessity of introducing the bill to amend the original act. However, she would partake in deliberations to the extent that she feels she must express a view as to how we could proceed with formulation of a particular provision or otherwise.
Chair, I didn't want to delay the process. I might have missed the DA's original rejection of. I wasn't there, so that I'm taking on board. I may be supporting them if I'm familiarized with their objection. Is it possible to give just a half a minute to inform us? I'm not informed.
No.
Is it possible?
No, the chair of the provincial factor in the DSA says that politically, meaning in their own structures, they could have had deliberations on this matter. And all we can do in this circumstance is to note that position. Yeah. But it's fine. I can give her the opportunity to reflect on that if you insist.
I think I just want as well to clarify myself and second. Initially, when colleges were to be taken to the national level, DA opposed because they felt these needed to still be administered at the provincial level. So they did not agree with that. So I thought what is being said now is that to some degree they still stand by that original. They do not want colleges taken to the national level. And it will be difficult now to start supporting because we have not changed that view necessarily. So I thought just for other members to understand where it comes in, it's not like the rejection was during this process of the amendment. It was then, but it's still to sustain that very debate or discussion by now.
I imagine that it would be well put by the member there. But thank you.
Okay, welcome. Thank you, Dr. Pointer. Let's proceed to we don't have any problem in section one, so we're proceeding to, we'll change where it says, further to be continuing as such. Then we will proceed to clause 2. There is a suggestion that after the minister must insert after consultation with the institute, meaning do we agree with that amendment? you can look at the document that proposes amendments.
I'm not sure if I'm with you. Are we moving close by close, or where are you now? Are you still on the, what is supposed to be first page, on the second page?
I'm not sure we are on page 3 of the original bin.
Yeah.
Now adding the changes that are reflected on the other document.
Sorry, Chairman. Just want to clear this on my mind. In view of what you said earlier on, linking it with the DA's position, the bill that we passed, which proposed to transfer these colleges from province to national. What is the position now, if I may just be, have they been transferred now?
Yes.
The function of a college is now within the mandate of higher education and training.
Yes.
Everything.
Yes.
But I know Bojan might want me to even go further and say, legislative competence of this area still remains the concurrent jurisdiction of the national and provincial spheres of government. Until we change the constitution, and we have not changed the constitution, we are still deliberating with the in parliament about amending the constitution if there is that necessity. I can see hands from the panel.
Thank you, Chair. May I just take the opportunity of welcoming our new DDG, Dr. Baharashwa, who is the DDG for Vocational and Continuing Education and Training. Chairperson, it's correct. The President sent it to the bill on the 24th of April this year. There were transitional measures. The Minister lifted all the transitional measures except two, and that is the budget and the HR matters that are still managed by provinces until the migration process in regards to budget and personnel is dealt with, and the department then is fairly confident that it will be able to manage those two particular functions.
Chair, if I can just add to that, if the members can remember, in the previous session it was dealing with the so-called FET colleges and the transfer of the functions from provincial to national within the national legislation. The difference to the position now is that this is in a bill which brings your adult education centers and training centers to be converted into an institutional type college within the ambit of this specific bill. And the effect of it will be similar to what happened to your FET colleges a year ago. There's two institutional types in course two, Chair, and also in the definition of colleges. It provides that there's two institutional types. The one is a technical and vocational education and training college, which is the new name for your FET college, and then the AE centers, the adult education and training centers, is actually incorporated to be a community education and training college. So, Chair, the effect of that amendment will also mean that there is a transfer of your statutory powers to become a national power, but it's not a national competency in terms of the constitution. It's only a transfer of powers within the national legislation. This bill will be subjected to the same process of a concurrent piece of legislation in section 76 of the constitution.
Let's proceed. You will remember that during our public hearings, there was a view that when the minister establishes a college, he or she must do so after consultation with the institute. Do you agree with that amendment? When the minister should not just on his own decide, he should consult with this institution that is going to be created in terms of this bill, the Institute for Vocational yes, continuing education and training, whatever.
In the definition, the institute is defined as the South African Institute for Vocational and Continuing Education and Training, established by the Ministry in terms of Section 43, Capital A, which is the new clause that's been or section that's introduced by the bill.
Yes. Are we agreed that the minister must now consult with this before establishing the college?
Chair, we agree.
Did you say Italy, where you came from?
Roji.
It's still crisis there now. Any further questions?
In consultation with what would be the meaning of that, say if there is a deadlock, the institution does not necessarily have to agree.
It says after consultation, meaning the minister must give due regard to the perspective of the institute, but he is not bound. Ultimately, he may have a different position. But he must consider before establishing a college the position or advice of the institute.
It is not in consultation with, in which event then the must be consensus.
Agreement? I can see you're conversing in agreement. Makuvele proposed and
sir, I just don't know what the confusion is because members don't seem to be able to move. I'm not sure if they're following you. I'm with you now. We're on line 44.
Yeah.
And members must go to line 44 and tell whether they agree. There was only one question asked and was clarified.
Yes.
And I thought we should be able to move forward.
Yes, it's seconded. then let's proceed to agreed that when says further education, as you say, continue, so that one was resolved. So we'll go to trust six, where it says training programs. As you say, training qualifications and some qualifications. There on the issue about the 10 ordinary members.
Yes. Sorry, Chairperson, I think some of the members are a bit confused because you seem to be working in an order that you know what none of the other members are aware of. Is there a document that you have that the other members don't have because you seem to be jumping to different sections?
I'm actually following the original bill.
The original bill. Remember, on this one, has got particular proposals that we made in our deliberations last week. And when we come to it, we will factor them in the original bill. There are some aspects which we raised. For instance, on page seven, line two, there where it says the chairperson and not more than 10 ordinary members. If I may remind you. We had said that we needed a qualifier there. Where is it in our amendment? If I may advise, then we can proceed.
On the one you're raising, first let me put it this way to remember. From the point where we, on section 6, where you draw members to, which was on page 4,
where we dealt with further and program. When you go to page 5, it's largely further and program that is being under, so you don't need anything on that. That's why we passed all those clauses there, because they don't need any discussion anymore. Now, page 6, there isn't much. Page 7, the chair is drawing us to the second line B on top there. A is chairperson and B, not more than 10 ordinary members. That's what the chair wants us to actually deal with before. The one on the same page, which is clause 15, which we must remove or omit, or 3, which I agree with that omission. I don't think there is going to be any discussion. But what I think other members should discuss on, because I don't think necessarily I was there on that day, is this one on B, on not more than 10 ordinary members, in terms of what the context is.
Yes.
Chair, if I can just refer to the discussion last week. Chair, the issue of the 10 members and the involvement of, or the suggested amendment, was made by the CA, the YESA, in connection with the Higher Education and Training Laws Amendment Bill, and not this bill. In that one, they specifically insisted that there should be a clear indication of where the members are coming from, and that they wanted to introduce an amendment to it. Chair, it was, I think the committee did not deliberate or provide any guidance on an amendment in terms of this bill, which is a different bill when it comes to that provision. And obviously, if the committee wants to change it, obviously it can still be done, but the committee doesn't express themselves at all on that aspect in relation to this bill.
No, I think you're correct. It was a similar sentence in the other act. I'm confusing. Now we can proceed with the proposal of accepting this as my committee suggested.
You know,
why don't you say not more than 10 members or additional members or whatever other than ordinary?
Chair, if I can maybe just draw the attention of the committee to the fact that sub 2A is talking about chairperson, and then B is talking not more than 10 ordinary members, and then if you look at sub 4, the board may co-opted persons to the board, which is, will also be members, and it is to differentiate between your board members and those that are appointed by the minister.
Okay. Does it make sense? Okay. Yes. However, what do you say? I can see.
Chairperson. You know, I think I get what Honorable Kennedy tried to say. Because when you say ordinary member, because there's a difference between an ordinary member and a member of the board. Because I think the other thing that we engage was that we need to get people with relevant skills to serve in that board. So when you say ordinary member, you know, the proper translation of it, you know, the proper meaning of it, that any person from the street can be an ordinary member. Yeah? Or maybe I misunderstood.
Okay. Let me take
Thank you, Chair. I think we're dealing here with the specific terminology within a specific section of the law. and when one looks at committees and how they, or boards and how they are constituted, you do make the distinction between members and ordinary members and co-opted members. So this is correct in terms of terminology.
Now, let me just check. You say the board may co-opt, but you don't really limit that. What if the board co-opts more members than even 10 members? Or they say the board may co-opt. Now they co-opt 20 people. And now the board is now 50 or 30. Don't you think you need to limit that? Let me hear the lawyers.
Chairperson, if you read the section, if you read the entire sub 4, it says the board may co-opt persons to the board for the period determined by the board. So the board has the power to determine exactly how long, how many members, what the powers are. So I don't think it would be, I don't think the board would want to give co-opted members any more powers than the ordinary members have.
Yes, I understand that. We just hope they are good people. But imagine, you see, they are not good people. They just see friends in the street and say, we are co-opted. We have got powers, and we even determine the period. You know, I'm saying that, let's look at that.
Chair, that sentence as a whole, that four, assumes that because either in the other section, which I'm not able to read it now, probably as the board co-opts, it can't co-opt people for a period longer than itself. It's just an assumption. But it may mean that they can co-opt people and say they go beyond their own term, which may not, I don't think that is the intention or the spirit of that clause. We may want to limit that period should be within that very body, it should not go beyond that term.
Yes. Now I'm beginning to debate the bill.
Co-opt the 10, where does it come from? And then the co-option, where does it come from?
Oh yes, the on line 2 on the same page, the bill says that the issue will be considered by the chairperson and 10 ordinary members. Then when you go at four there, it says may co-opt. Now we are debating, since the board may co-opt, would it not be necessary to limit that co-option so as not to have an unintended consequence of the institute appointing more members than the original number? Because once you don't provide that in law, one of the problems of our laws is that sometimes they are so open-ended that they create problems. Now here you have got a board of 11 members which can co-opt as many people as they wish. I think for us is a serious concern. There must be a way of limiting that.
Chairperson, who should decide? Because I don't know if the members of Parliament should decide that.
Yes.
This amount and number should not exceed.
Yes. That is our power now.
Yes.
You are in the right place to take that decision. So members, from Bojani to me here.
Concern, right?
Yes.
Chair, I think as you are saying, probably what my proposal is that the board may co-opt not more than 3 members, and their term must not exceed that current board as their appointed time.
Sir, not coming into, I agree that there should be limitation to numbers and that it should be within that term. But as well, I thought we need to indicate what guides that co-option. Do people just
wake up and say we think we must be more or what. There should be certain things. If, for instance, in the area of expertise they need to function, they don't have the necessary or required skills, they can then go ahead and say, perhaps we need to be beefed up on this or that expertise. Not just to want numbers for the sake of numbers. Because isn't it, you don't need strength necessarily to go and pick certain things or something. You need ideas, you know, in terms of taking forward the work of the board. So we must be clear why the 10 or the 11 people can't do that work. What else do they need? I think that area of introducing what should guide the board coming up with extra people should be there.
Okay. I'm trying to formulate a proposal here that why don't we say the board may not co-opt, may co-opt persons not exceeding 5 for requisite expertise, not beyond their tenure, something like that. We'll come down. We're debating, is it? Because if we just take decisions like we may live with serious consequences.
Yes, Chair. In sub 3, the term of office of the chairperson and the ordering members is linked to 5 years. So, Chair, the time frame for the co-opted members will then also be for not longer than 5 years. Chair, the amendment can obviously be effected quite easily, as you suggested, and it would then. The second aspect to it is the guiding principles within which the co-option can take place, and the normal approach is to link it to specific expertise which is required, and it's expertise within you can link it to skills, continuing education, which is a very broad concept. And also skills development, which is that link which this institute will have with the CETA, and also it can link to financial expertise or legal expertise. Those are the normal approach, but obviously there are others as well.
Let's not specify, but say required expertise, or requested expertise, as so that then the board will deliberate in its own meeting and determine whatever skills they are in short supply of, and then they co-opt. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, I mean, I think the whole clause needs to be looked.
Yeah, we're going to look at the whole clause. Because the board actually only consists of A and B, the chairperson, and not more than 10 ordinary members. Because the stem of that section 2 says the board of the institute consists of. So perhaps in order to obviate the confusion to the board, would it not assist to say that the board may co-opt persons to assist it for a period not greater than the board's term of office? So that they don't have voting rights automatically, and they cannot override the board, who then has that responsibility of governance and administration.
And the danger is if the law does not specify that they can't vote, then who would say you can't vote?
That's what I wanted to come to, again, it will be an assumption.
Yeah.
That when they are there, they won't vote. And I don't think you must leave that to further interpretations you know, because a meeting can get stuck, and the chair may not even be clear whether I must allow them to vote or not. You know, that kind of a thing. So I agree that we may not need to specify what sort of skills should be there. But at the same time, given the fact that the board has 5 years, does not mean that if you co-opt people just a year before the end of your term, at times you may not be tempted to say they will be here for more time than the actual board. And when the minister is to either get a new term into office, a new board into office, will necessarily say those one term goes with the other one, if the law does not clarify that. So all we're saying, let's have that clarity without making a broader statement, but something that is clear, to say the term will be within its own term. They can't bind another board to co-opted members. So they must only restrict that to their own, you know, and it should be based on certain things. You don't just co-opt because you want more members. But with that co-option, the number goes beyond 11. That's my understanding. Yeah, so it will consist of more than 11 people. Yeah, I think that's why, that's how I understand it. Yeah, the first two are as you set up the board. But once the board sits, has got a right in terms of that line 4 to co-opt other other people, whichever we agree, whether we say 3, whether we say 4, then it will end up being 15 or so.
Let's hear the legal.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just have to clarify two issues now that the mem brought up. The board doesn't have a term. The board runs perpetually. The members of the board have a term. So that's not to say that if one resigns or is fired, etc., it means the board still continues because they have other members. That's the first issue. So the board doesn't have a term. The board runs perpetually. It goes on and on and on and on and on, regardless of whether it has 10 members or 5 members. That leads me to my second issue. Just because the section reads not more than 10 ordinary members, it doesn't mean that there will always be 10 ordinary members. Because the board can operate with less than 10 ordinary members.
Yes. You see, look, we are clear. One of the problems in South African legislatures is that we make clumsy laws. And this is one other issue that is going to emerge. This board doesn't have a specific number. It could be about 3 members, 4 members, but not exceeding 10 of additional members. And now, when the board sees whichever number it is, they may co-opt. How many people they can co-opt, the bill does not suggest. That is what we need to address specifically.
Now, with the explanation, what it means is that if the board was constituted by, say, 8, nah? And it gives them leeway to have 11. If you have got 8, it means you only have got spaces for 3. That's what you say. Because that's how I will then get to understand you. And that's not what. No. Isn't it chair? You will have the chair. And if you decide not to have 10, you have 8 ordinary, then you have 9. Then, if you are to co-opt, it means you can only get 2 more. That's how I'm reading it. Otherwise, it will mean if there are 11 right from the word go,
yes,
and they have to co-opt, they co-opt on top of that 11, then it means 15 or something like that.
Chair,
would it be wrong for the department or whoever to rephrase that clause to read like the board will consist of 10 board members, to leave that plus
the chairperson and
10
members?
Yes.
If you want to be specific, you can say that. But now, you
because
want the flexibility. You want the flexibility of a lesser number.
Because I'm saying at this stage, really, because we are looking at clause by clause and voting. We need concrete proposal, you know, at this stage now. Somebody must propose. And what
the department needs a board, and we want to give them a board. But what we don't want to give them is a board that we can't have a picture of it. You know? Absolutely. The minister may decide, no, no, I'm appointing the chairperson and three members. Or add in the process five more. There are nine. And then add another day, the tenth one. So the board, in the mind of all of us.
So I'm very sorry. I don't know what's going on here today.
And we are within our right. We are still going to come to a proposal of three co-opted members. Yes.
Chair, you see, as we were debating, you were making a proposal as well to say that possibility exists that the board may co-opt more than its own number.
Yes.
I thought you meant that they may co-opt more than 11.
Yes.
And have a board of 20. Something people,
yes.
You know, that's how I'm following this.
Yes.
Now, even if this section is consistent with whatever suggestion by ESA on another one, and so on, but now that we're debating it, it takes us to the core,
yes,
of why are we married to the 11 and not 50, and so on. Well, you can as well say it will be a chair and not more than 10 members, or ordinary members, whatever you put it. And then see, they may co-opt other persons to assist them, but not exceeding,
yes,
this number as a total. So if you say whatever they do, they may not exceed 15, it means you are limiting their number in terms of what they can do in the
Yeah.
If at the beginning, when they set up the board, the number was not even 11, it was lesser. But usually, you put a number that is clear first, and then limit the corruption. What I'm saying, Chair, is that perhaps it's a bit not correct for us to say it should not exceed 10 at the beginning. You can say 10, and you know it's 11. And then when you go to corruption, you say it may not exceed 5. Then you know that the board will not be more than 50 years. And then that's how
what. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I just need to add a bit of clarity also for the members so we can understand, so that the members may understand better. Sub 4 says the board may not co-opt persons, so the persons that are co-opted are not members of the board. The board will never exceed more than the 11 people. There's a persons to it, and I think it might be necessary to just say that to assist the board, but these people who are co-opted are not members of the board, because otherwise the section would have read co-opted board members or ordinary members. So that's the first distinction. The second distinction, the second issue is not more than 10 ordinary members. The problem is if you put a fixed amount of people, the board will consist of 10 ordinary members, and you then remove the not more than, you're creating a situation where should the board have less than 10 members, it won't be able to function. It's going to be hampered in a certain way, which means that the rest of the functions that if there's important financial decisions that need to be made, the board can't make those decisions, so it will first need to find another member, and the process will then be through the minister, and it will take very long. So that's the danger of putting in a rider where just 10 members. So that is what the purpose of not more than 10 members is.
Yes, I know that the issue, usually such matters are resolved by what is the quorum of that meeting. Like Parliament, we know the number of members in there. If somebody is absent or dead or whatever, we still continue operating because we use the quorum. So let's be very clear here. So if we need to limit, let's limit. Prof, then Makubele, then Gina, then yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'm have a divided mind here. I came here to boost the quorum. and the debate is hot and I'm not damaged. Just to add more confusion here, when you say, I'm imagining that in the first term you managed to get to 11. are we saying at the end of 5 years they are all gone and start again new? How do we cover that year? Because if I say 5 year term and you are lucky to get to 11, 5 years end, do they all go and have a new board?
When I look at this clause, I don't know, but it says that a board will serve, let's say members of the board, if I were to agree with my colleague then, will serve for 5 years, with the minister may extend by another 5 years, so they can serve 10 years. Yeah, that's what it says. That's what it says, unless I'm no longer aware from today. Now, we are concerned with the issue that we can add more people there. That one I'm worried about. And if it does not specify, if the law does not specify, what happens? Yes.
I think the clarity that the board itself is continuous. Understandable, but members of course will come and go. I think it's just like that in terms of many other institutions. But what is a worry is the status of the co-opted members. Because if you are co-opted and the understanding is that you are joining a board, probably on an equal status, and upon sitting, you are told, no, your co-option means that you are a lesser member here. In fact, when it comes to decision making, you are not there. When it comes to this and that, you are not there. When you did not understand it from the word go, it's a problem. Because once you accept nomination to serve on that board, that co-option, it comes with particular status. What is that status now? You go there to observe, you go there as a resource person, and that then makes even what is required for them to be, how to co-opt, important now. If you are not joining as equal member status in terms of their membership in the board, that becomes another issue.
Okay. Chairperson, see, my problem is that you are busy mixing many things here. If you can just focus on the issue of saying what do we deal with the issue of corruption, how do we determine the number? And after that, we move to the status of those co-opted members. I think that would be able to assist. Because now we're dealing with many things at the same time. Because my suggestion was that we look at the issue of, as you explained earlier, that obviously the board must have a quorum. And we must look in terms of how many members that can be co-opted, because I believe that you must keep limitation. Because once we say open for co-option, it will cause a lot of confusion. Because at some certain extent, when we're debating about the board of the universities, we also mentioned, just I think we're in one of the oversight visits, to say once the board becomes, you know, too huge, doesn't become a board, but it becomes a rally, you know. So we must avoid that kind of you know, situation. Let's give a limitation to the board, and then after that we go to the extent of discussing the status of those people who are co-opted. I think that will be able to assist.
Yeah,
Chair,
I think the member obviously address the issue, and the honourable member is 100% correct to say that the limitation is a very important factor. The issue here would be, is it the co-opted member of this board, should that person have voting rights or not? And it's easy to make an amendment to say to opt without voting rights or with voting rights to clarify that issue.
the rationale behind voting rights or non-voting rights is to say, what is the role that you want this this member to play? Because you've got at maximum 16 members if the proposal of 5 is accepted as co-opted members, which means that if there is any vacancy, then you've got a smaller number to take decisions, and with your co-opted members, you then at least can have a broader participation in the outcome of those decisions if they've got voting rights. If the decision is to say no, it is purely a technical expert advice that you are going to get from your co-opted members, then obviously it is a decision that's influenced by experts in the end and not the broader framework. So that, I think, is the principles that should end up opening this decision. Should this be with voting right, or these adopted members with voting right, or without voting right? If it is without voting right, it is still for those members to take a decision. And if you take a decision by the 11 or whatever, if there's a vacancy or two, it's still a board that's taking that decision, and the expert just influencing that decision but not actually taking that decision or participating in that decision-making process, it's fine. There's no problem with it. If it is a decision to say the decision-making structure should be involved, and because of the involvement of your co-opted members, it provides a broader basis, and therefore it is still within the parameters of a small, it's not a mass rally as indicated, it is a small number, it's 16 people taking it, and that is providing a broader perspective in the outcome, and it cannot be manipulated that easily as if the numbers become too small. So those are the things that I think the committee should consider. And so whatever the outcome, it's easy to accommodate and provide a legal certainty because it's a few words that you just add or by with voting rights or without voting rights.
Chair, perhaps if the legal section can help, I've got two problems with this clause. The first one, there's no threshold for the minimum number of the appointed or nominated members. This board may end up being dysfunctional as far as the nominated members are concerned. It may end up functioning with two nominated members and the rest opted members, see, because we don't have a threshold, you know. That's the first problem, that's the first difficulty. But it would have been better if we said it may not consist, it may consist not less than and not more than, then I'll be happier. So we are certain. With committees, Chair, in our own everyday life, where we end up really dealing, functioning with opted members, the committee is dysfunctional by definition. So that's my first problem. The second one, if they can address that as well, is on the nominated one. Because the argument from there that the co-opted persons, that the emphasis persons, but these persons are co-opted to the board. They come to the board, so they become part of the board. That's why, therefore, we need to delineate their function. If the legal section can give clarity on those issues, I would be happy. I'm not happy as it is now.
We'll take a decision. I can see you are going to a decision.
Chairperson, it says here, not more than 10, including the chairperson. It could be 7 or 8. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What happens if one falls out? Does the board replace that somebody co-opt? Or what would be the process?
The original L, does it zero special? I don't think this is special.
What's 3P?
No, that's the one lower down.
It sort of, to me, it doesn't balance. Say, for instance, if the members keep dropping out, they stay like that as they are dropping, as long as they are not more than 10.
Yes.
And the co-opted members, if they fall out, then what happens? They still co-opt or they stay like that?
Yes, yes,
sir. So could I propose that we don't co-opt maximum of, a minimum of 9 and a maximum of 15? We don't have any co-ops in here. We just have a minimum board of 9 and a maximum of 15. Then all members are members. But that we are trying to accomplish co-ops because we are assuming that we need more people and that more cannot be more than 15. I'm putting on the table the proposal. The board of a minimum of 9, the maximum of 15. No co-ops.
A good proposal which accommodates every venture, any eventuality. For the chairperson and ordinary members, not more than 50.
Yeah, and that chairperson all with voting rights, they have got equal status. So it's fine.
Okay.
Chair, the issue that has been mentioned by a member from the IFP of a threshold, I think must be specified as well.
Nine. That's what you say. Oh, okay. A minimum of 9 and a maximum of 15. So that there must be some sense of specificity. Yes. That is clear. Thank you. Thank you. I know that there's wisdom that will move. Because we must hold other meetings. Let's go to we on clause 16 we may are we agreeing with the,
yes. Let's understand one thing as well on three. Of course I know there could be situations where perhaps the minister may call for nominations for a period less than 5 years. But, Honorable Hadar, don't shake the hand. It can be. Because 3 says those nominations received in a manner prescribed for a term of office, not exceeding a period of 5 years. Meaning there could be instances where the term of office may be less than 3 years. I'm just thinking, perhaps when you are to remove the board and you must put another one in the middle of the term, probably you can then say it's for 2 years or something like that. I just want the context within which we think that eventuality could arise.
Here, I can just draw the Honourable Member's attention to the new section 43D, sub 4, which is a person appointed to fill a vacancy in terms of the section of the office of the unexpired period of the terms of office of his predecessor. And here it is to keep it within that time frame.
Not about the board, just about individual.
Can we
says not exceeding 3 years. So a minister can have a board for 2 years, but 5 then compels the minister, if he extends it, to extend it for 5 years. So there should be some alignment between that 5 years and the period that the minister has determined.
Yes,
sir.
It might be that the minister in the first term wants to have a shorter period. The norm is a 5-year period. And if there's a good reason to move to a shorter period, the minister got that discretion. But it's not affecting the fact that the norm remains a 5-year. And even the second term, it is additional period of 5 years, but it can also be a shorter period than 5 years.
So make it maximum.
Yes.
For a maximum period of 5 years.
Yes. Ordinary interpretation. The additional aspect does not give the minister discretion. It says 5 years. Unless in his mind he may think he has a discretion. But in terms of the law, he does not have a discretion. It says 5 years. It's very specific. And if it is lesser, it might just be ultra vires, because it will not be appearing in the law before. Yes, Khadr?
Chairman, number 3 says, Chairperson, by the minister may nominate and receive a prescribed for the term of office not exceeding. When it says not exceeding, actually it can be also less. Therefore, you must take out that not exceeding. It must just specify to say term of office is a period of 5 years. Done. But what's not exceeding? You are putting an argument. I'm not a lawyer, Chair, but I've learned a lot from you about law. You must not put argument. You must not put, you know, things that, you know, can be challenged in the court. Let's take out the aspect of not exceeding. Natural sense, they will say the term of office must be 5 years. Done.
Yeah, let me take
thank you, Chairperson. The rationale behind the period not exceeding 5 years is that the person who is appointed may not be available for a full 5-year period. So, for example, the retirement age, and the person retires at the age of 65, but is appointed at the age of 62. If you say that the person is then appointed for a period of 5 years, that person can't be appointed. Or it might be the person is appointed for a particular skill for a particular period. If you appoint that person for 5 years and say that you can only appoint the person for 5 years, you're limiting the ability of the person to appoint.
The point which I hear is that let's permit that sense of flexibility to provide for whatever circumstances that may prevail.
You see, personally, I don't have a problem in the minister. For instance, on the 43D, I don't think there's an issue there that the minister for individual persons who are replacing others or filling vacancies, you could usually have a period not exceeding 5 years. It may happen a lot there. But when we refer to the board, constituting the board in the first instance, those nominations mostly will be for 5 years period. You know, and that's why I had an interest in understanding how does the lesser period arise. But it may happen that indeed there could be good reason why the minister thinks for a particular term it should not be necessarily 5 years. So we must not deal with that. I think we must leave that discretion. But again, on 5, it says one additional 5-year period. So that there's no less time. If he is to renew, it means he's renewing for 5 years. It can't be extending by a year or something, and which we may need to include so that, you know, in life you can't anticipate certain things. You must try and close gaps so that you don't say there's no provision in law. You can't extend, you rather renew for 5 years. That's the option. Or you must do away with the bond. So I think we must introduce something that can talk to a year or two kind. Yes, either the maximum one can actually encompass what I'm trying to talk about, which I don't think that was going to be a problem. But I wanted to as well, Chair, if that you'll take care of in the discussion, so that I don't keep coming back. I wanted to attend to the one the lawyer here was actually advancing, that a person can be appointed when in fact is due for retirement in few years to come, and that will affect the duration of that member in the board. That's not my understanding of how in many other provisions of the law happens. If they say, and the person will be clarified here, if you still qualify, you are eligible for nomination or election into any structure, but you have got a year or two before, what is it, before, if you were to qualify there for the next 2 years, but in the third year you were not going to be qualifying, but you are accepted now, you run the full part of that term of office. You don't reach a stage somewhere midway and you are told, by the way, your age is now, we must replace you. Unless if that is made clear here, that in terms of this particular board, you can't go beyond that if your age is now, you are now older than the board, then you must go.
No, that's fine. I agree with all the analysis from both sides. If we would like to also still add some flexibility on the subsequent additional period by the minister, you may add additional period not exceeding 5 years and remove the offer. So let's do that. And then we'll proceed. Yes, sir?
So I need your guidance here. How long is my quorum making good?
We are about to finish, because I would like us to focus on the decisions we made here, because apparently we agree. It was the only issue which was not finalized. So we'll move to the decisions that we have here, and then we close the meeting. Because I know that Progress got another important meeting to attend, and it's worried that we are focusing on this today. We are agreed that we will add not exceeding there and remove the off, so that we could allow some flexibility there. Let's then proceed to the additions that we made. Remember, we sought to clarify the issue of financial difficulty. And we said financial impropriety. We agree with that. With that, we were moving and we're effecting that amendment. What is page 8? Yes. We said financial difficulty is very loose. If the budget is too little, then we say, oh, there are financial problems. If it's too loose, you can't spend, there are financial problems. If you have not budgeted for something, so we say, no, we must say financial enterprise. That's where we will intervene.
And also, Chair, let me add.
Page 8, we presume that the minister, 4-3-F, the minister may issue a direction in board to the satisfied by the minister in the we presume that the minister
won't do that arbitrarily. He will have investigated the matter, right?
Yes.
And with, there's no need to say the minister may, after due investigation. We don't want to add that one.
Yeah, on the last issue raised by the Honourable Member, the safeguard is the fact that the minister will provide his intention to the institute, and that board will then have the opportunity to provide reasons and why that intention is not. That is in sub 3. Before making that decision, the minister must, subject to the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, give the board a notice of his intention, a reasonable opportunity to make representations and consider them before he can take that decision. And the interpretation of consider, it means meaningfully engaging with it, and based on a rationale, he can only take that decision. That is what is the subject to the promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Chair, here's another issue. The word, if you just displace the word difficulty with financial, with proprietary, it's not making sense in a linguistic see, it is not making sense. So the words that must be deleted in line 14 is in financial difficulty in the original bill must be replaced by involved in financial impropriety. Then it makes a sense. Otherwise, it's not making sense at all.
No, that's the one mentioned. I don't think that's in the case. Let's proceed on page 9. We would like to insert that provision that says the minister must act in accordance with the provisions of the Administrative Justice Act of 2000. Blah 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 blah. Just we agreed on that. Let's go to clause 22. What did you reject here? Well, we amended the preamble.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. If you remember that the suggestion was made in this committee last week to indicate that link of basic adult basic education and further education and training with the new terminology of continuing education. And Chair, it is to provide for that, and therefore it would be better to repeal, because it's difficult to deal with it as an amendment in the Act or in the Amendment Bill, because the lines are not linked. That's why it is right at the end, the preamble and the long title. We amend it right at the end. So what the amendments to the preamble was to say that wherever further education and training appears, it must be replaced by continuing education. But here it is not going far enough to bring in those new concepts. And with this, we've just provided a clear amendment where the amendments of your further education and training is replaced by continuing education, and link it with those two concepts in the Constitution, which makes a holistic approach that this is not taking away rights, but it is amplifying it through this vehicle of continuing education.
Yes, I think it's very clear the rearticulation of the preamble, which includes basic adult education, so that we should not be found wanting to have lost it along the path of our policy formulation.
I think that clause, as will be refined now, is still on page 3 as well, on the note that asks us to discuss it as they are. I'm seeing on this, yes, then you have that, for instance, the last one says to ensure access to basic adult education.
Yes.
and so on and so forth. At least what the concern was, you have the public who may not be clear that it's covered within continuing, unless if you spell out. And I think that's all we needed. So it should be clear that we agree with the new formulation.
Okay. Meaning, therefore, that we adopt the re-articulated preamble with the lesser amendments, and that we approve of the original bill as submitted by the department with the amendments effected by the committee. It is me. The last aspect, it is, I'm sure I'm correct in saying what I'm suggesting. I'm sure we basically have come to the end of deliberations.
Yes, thank you very much. But we're going to get now a new amended bill.
Yes, there will be an amended bill before us here tomorrow morning. At 9 o'clock we're meeting, it will be reflecting all the amendments effected in this meeting. Yes. It must not be, you see, let me say this, in the House, the other day, I don't know which department was, they deliberated on a bill and approved of a different one in the House. So with us, they were clear, we're going to do proper things, we'll effect the amendments by the committee and not have a different one before the, what do you call those people at the front, in Parliament, the table. And now you are in trouble. So we will record the decision that we reflect the amendments as contained in the document that was provided for the committee to be able to deliver it effectively. The meeting is adjourned. And let me thank Prof for having come. We are released. tomorrow we are starting at 9 because basic education is going to start their meeting at 10:30. So we're going to vote close by close. It might take about 30 minutes. We really have requested them to give us just that opportunity. We don't have any other opportunity. This bill is going to be debated on Thursday in the afternoon in the House. It must be very clear.